I'm Julia Karen.
I'm Jared Golub.
And this is the fifth episode of the Washington Bullpen. This week's episode, we have reactions to the school shooting out in Florida and proposed legislation. Then we're going to lead into the indictments handed down by Robert Mueller's team over the past week. And for our Behind the Bureau segment, Christmas in February is in fact here. We're talking to Hannah Yasharoff, her second appearance on the show, about the new Christmas ornament from the White House Historical Association.
Following the deadly shooting in Parkland, Florida last week, there has been a large push for gun control legislation. On a state level, this hasn't exactly panned out yet. Florida legislators voted down the possibility of even talking about gun control legislation 36-71 while students from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School were in the gallery.
But then Dinesh D'Souza made it worse with a ill-timed tweet from a photo from John Passantino of the AP that showed the reaction of the survivors from the high school in the gallery, with one of the kids has her hand over her mouth. And Dinesh D'Souza's comment is, "Worst news since their parents told them to get summer jobs." I don't really think that's in the same ballpark.
On the national level, however, there are still measures waiting to be talked about. The Fix NICS Act, a bill proposed by Republican Senators John Cornyn of Texas and Tim Scott of South Carolina, and Democratic Senators Chris Murphy and Richard Blumenthal of Connecticut, which was introduced in December following a shooting at a Texas church. This measure essentially seeks to incentivize the background check system, pushing states to accurately report and send their records to the National Instant Criminal Background Check System, making it more universal, which is something that a Quinnipiac poll from February 20th, said was supported by 97% of respondents.
You can't get 97% of people to agree on anything, so this is a big deal. This also comes at a time when that same Quinnipiac University poll stated that a majority of Americans, at 66%, now support stricter gun laws.
Yeah, so clearly people are ready for change here.
Right, we're starting to see a little bit of action as we speak. Anthony Brown from Maryland has proposed legislation that would up the age from when someone can buy a semi-automatic weapon, a rifle, from 18 years old to 21 years old. His view on it is kids can drink at 21 and you can gamble at 21. And normally to buy a handgun, you have to be 21 years old. But he thought it was a little bit interesting that you could buy a semi-automatic rifle when you're under 21. So he's trying to up the age there. And the big thing is that these kids aren't going away. Comments that are made on social media saying that they were, you know, planted as crisis actors, or saying that they were incentivized by, you know, the liberals or anything like that, are being shot down by a generation of kids who have lived on the internet and know how to take it to these people. What do you think that means for the future of this discussion?
I think it means that these politicians aren't going to be able to escape the discussion like they have in the past, where, you know, the Sandy Hook shooting was at an elementary school. Those kids, you know, it was their parents talking for them on the news. They weren't out there tweeting at politicians themselves. They weren't giving speeches on CNN, you know? It's a lot more powerful to see these kids, and it's a lot more difficult to ignore. For more information on the legislation going through Congress right now, you can find my article on cnsmaryland.org.
Speaking of people who are social media savvy, it ain't just teenagers.
Last week, there were 13 indictments of Russian citizens by Robert Mueller's investigative team.
Here's the thing. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein makes it a point to say that in this particular indictment, if you listen back to his press conference, he says that in this indictment, it doesn't say that Russia colluded directly. Now, what it does say is that these 13 Russian citizens worked for the Internet Research Agency, which is a troll farm, essentially, in St. Petersburg, Russia. And for people who don't know what troll farms are, they're places where all of these citizens make fake Facebook and Twitter or social media accounts, and then they dupe people into following, liking, and promoting content that's false. For example, they took a handle for the Tennessee GOP. It was at TEN_GOP, and it had over 100,000 followers. So in terms of promoting fake news, promoting content that is inaccurate or false, what he's charging these guys with is there's conspiracy to defraud the United States. That is the big one. Obviously, defrauding the United States would involve setting up these accounts, trying to dupe people and maybe persuade them of something that might not be true. The next count is conspiracy to commit wire fraud and banking fraud. Obviously, they needed funding to make this happen. So that's the second count. And then counts 3 through 8 essentially say these guys committed identity theft, aggravated identity theft. So what's really happening here is he's going after these nationals and saying, hey, you tried to spread disinformation. You tried to sow discord. We aren't standing for that. One of the things about this agency in particular and these nationals is that the original purpose of the Internet Research Agency and these troll farms, when they started in the summer of 2013, was to spread anti-Hillary Clinton propaganda on Facebook and Twitter.
Because, if you remember, Clinton is considered one of Putin's biggest political enemies.
And then a shift happens. Once it's realized that Donald Trump is a serious candidate for president, it quickly not only just becomes anti-Hillary content, but it becomes pro-Trump content as well. And of course, one of the important things that President Trump has noted and that he's latched on to, and he tweeted about, was saying, quote, Russia started their anti-U.S. campaign in 2014, long before I announced that I would run for president. The results of the election were not impacted. The Trump campaign did nothing wrong. No collusion. But it's fair to say that what Rosenstein and Mueller have discovered is that the goal of this operation changed over time once Trump became a true political candidate. Now, it doesn't directly say there was collusion. And again, Rob Rosenstein made it a point to say that this indictment says that there is no collusion. And obviously, part of the goal of these troll farms, of this endeavor, was to sow discord, was to make people disbelieve their government. Donald Trump says, if it was the goal, all caps, of Russia to create discord, disruption, and chaos within the U.S., then, with all of the committee hearings, investigations, and party hatred, they have succeeded beyond their wildest dreams. They are laughing their asses off in Moscow. Get smart, America. So what he's saying is, if the goal, obviously, is to, you know, make divides within the country, they've succeeded. They've won.
While indictments have been made, there is still no evidence of collusion, and the extent to which there was any is still unknown. And now we're bringing Hannah Yasharoff into the studio to talk to us about her recent article on the White House Christmas ornament.
Can you explain what your thought process was for this story?
So Jim, our bureau director, actually pitched this story to me. He's been collecting them from the very start. So the White House Historical Association, which is a nonpartisan organization in Washington, has been commissioning these ornaments since 1981. So they started, every year they dedicate one to a president. So they started with Washington, we're up this year to Truman, and each one kind of shares a story about the president that maybe we weren't totally familiar with, but that's kind of a nice homage to their legacy.
That's very cool. So talk to me a little bit about how they decided on the ornament that they picked for this year.
Yeah, so every year they start in about March for the following year. So the one that just came out, it came out on President's Day. They've been working on it for almost a year. But they get together with the design company, which is based in Rhode Island. They've been working with them since the beginning. And they pitch about 8 to 10 designs, and they kind of get together and decide, you know, what do we really want to focus on for this one? And then after that, they kind of narrow it down from there. Once they have a design, they send it over to the First Lady's office, because this has been, since it began, it's been a project that the First Lady works with them on. The president this year, the president of the White House Historical Association, so they sent it to Mrs. Trump, and she loved it. and from there they get to work. So they, when they first started doing this, they created about 1,500 ornaments. Now, you know, in past years, they've made almost a million, and they sell them all throughout the year.
Very cool. So, do they ever run out of designs? Right? There's only 45 presidents.
Exactly.
So at some point, you figured they'd run out, but do they?
Yeah, so in about, we have, there are 11 presidents to go with Trump, so, you know, pretty soon they are going to run out. They've talked about starting over with the presidents. They've also talked about starting over with each first lady, which I think would be a cool kind of a different take on it. So there are a few more years before they have to kind of figure that out, but they have, there are options.
Very cool. All right. That's Hannah Yashiroff. You can find her piece on the White House Historical Association's Christmas ornament on cnsmaryland.org. Find us on cnsmaryland.org, and our theme music is by Brenna Carroll.
And that wraps it up for episode 5 of The Washington Bullpen. I'm Jared Golub.
I'm Julia Caron.
Thanks for joining us.